This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello. Thank you for going to the Les Schwab Twires.
Twires?
I don't know. Hello. We appreciate you going to the Les Schwab.
Why can't like you say tires?
Vive Clicquot. It's the same
Just
thing.
Just say tires.
Where do we pick up from? Hi, everyone. You're listening to the Sinner and the Saint podcast. I'm Luke Anderson.
I'm Will Darkins, and this is sponsored by Les Schwab Tires. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay.
Yep. Enjoy.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
Sociopath Will Darkins on 1080 The Fan.
Hey! Happy Saturday morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us on our silly little radio program. Will Darkins, how are you doing this morning?
The best radio program.
The best silly
it's
little.
It's the best.
Whoa, hype man. You're pumped up this morning.
You bet I'm pumped up. You know where I was last night?
No. Yes. I do. You were at the Washington County Fairgrounds for Wolfstock.
Wolfstock 2019. With Chris Jansen.
Yeah, how's Chris Jansen doing?
Let me tell you something. Chris Jansen is, if you were to imagine him as a painting.
Yeah?
It is a bald eagle in a bed with American flag themed pillow covers.
Statue of Liberty under the bed with him.
Basically watching softcore with the Statue of Liberty and George Washington going at it.
Wow.
It's that much patriot.
That is pretty spectacular.
He's really talented. It's just like everything was about country and God and how much he loved his wife.
Well, that's good. Well, what's he doing in bed with George Washington and the Statue of Liberty?
No, he's watching.
Oh, he's just
watching.
Him and his wife are watching together.
No, she's not there.
Okay.
That's alone time for Chris.
That's alone time. Yeah, pretty good time then, huh?
It was a really good time. Really, you know, I'm not a fan of country music, but Chris Jansen is a talented SOB. I mean, he was on the harmonica, the drums, the guitar. He had a segment where he was on the piano and he was playing classic rock hits. Like,
yeah.
He's a talented guy. It's just like, you know, I don't prefer the music.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So before we get into too much sports, something came up. I was in a conversation with somebody this week, and I just wanted to get your feel on this because I'm not sure how to feel about it.
Is it another stalker?
No. Stalker went pretty all right. Turns out she was a little kooky-doo towards everybody in the entire party. So pretty much, yeah, there was a pretty good, group effort of keeping her at arm's length.
So it was a group orgy.
Yeah, for sure. And if you don't know what we're talking about, my 20-year class reunion last week, that is a bizarre thing to go to. By the end of the night, I was just doing the thing where you walk up to people and you go, yep, remember you? Yep, remember you? So you're going to do just like the 90-second version of our lives for the last 20 years? And people were like, sure. And then we would just do it as quick as we could and then move on. But my favorite part was actually there was people that I knew and that I recognized. And you made like eye contact across the room and you're like, all right, you're one of the people. Because big enough graduating class that there's a lot of people that I just didn't recognize. There's spouses there.
Sure.
But there's a handful of people that I saw. I was like, I remember you. You remember me. We don't have anything to say. Should we just move on? And we did. There's at least 5 people that we just kind of both silently agreed not to say anything. And that was fantastic.
That sounds like an awkward reunion.
No, it was fine. There's plenty of people that I wanted to talk to, and I went and I talked to them. There's people that I've kept up with. There's people that I haven't, but it was like, you know, hey, how long has it been? 20 years? And then we have a nice little conversation. And then there was people that it was just like, we didn't really have anything in common. We didn't talk. We don't have like moments that we shared, but we knew the same people. We ended up in the same place a few times. I clearly know who you are. You definitely know who I am. But let's just not waste our effort.
So did you have the awkward women you slept with in high school you saw there, and then you both had to like act like it didn't happen because you're both now happily married with kids?
No, there's none of that. There's no weird sexual tension in the room.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
So this was not a very good reunion.
It was a perfectly fine reunion.
You need a little bit of sexual tension at a high school reunion. Yeah, you definitely do.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You definitely do. Now, I mean, you know, my high school reunion, there's going to be some male teachers. It's not going to be comfortable.
I don't think the teachers normally go. They didn't go for ours.
They all wanted me.
Fair enough. So that was not what I was going to talk about. So this week I was talking with this guy, and he very casually is telling me about a new house that him and his wife are building. And it's, you know, being built in a development, a new development. It's not like he's, you know, building his dream home mansion thing. But he's talking about the house, and he just very casually drops the, you know, so we're getting all the rooms set up and my wife's getting it just the way she likes it. And, you know, and since we have separate rooms, we just did. And I was like, wait, what? And he just very casually dropped in the fact that him and his wife have separate rooms. Now, you're just about to be married. I've been married 13 years. It has never occurred to me to bring up to my wife in conversation, what do you think about us getting our own rooms?
Yeah, that's the early signs of divorce.
See, that was my initial thought, but he said it in just a very comfortable, like, hey, we're good. My grandparents had separate rooms. I don't know when they got separate rooms, but I think it was when grandpa got, you know, the snores real bad.
Yeah, but that's a different age, too, because I mean, you know that people used to sleep in separate beds in the same room.
Did they, or was that for television because you couldn't show people, like, in their love nest in 1950s television?
No, sir. People were happy sleeping in separate beds, not touching each other. Like, I think when people used to get married back in the 40s and 50s, they consummated it and then never touched each other again.
Yeah.
Ever. Unless they had to have another kid for
whatever. Same thing will happen to you and you won't realize it. But yeah, that's marriage. So that's, it hasn't changed all that much over the years. But I'm just wondering, 55305, Better You Today text line. I figure we have our audience. Anybody pull off the separate rooms, separate beds, or is that, like you said, early signs of divorce? But he said it just very comfortably and casually, like it was no big deal.
Because he's getting used to the idea that he's going to get divorced.
But here's the thing. If it's a first sign of divorce, why are they getting a new house? That is a bad move. Oh, yeah, let's upgrade our house on the way to separation.
Dude, people do this all the time. They try to fake each other out that Megan and I have this couple that like are having a kid right now. Like she's, you know, 8 months pregnant. She's about ready to burst.
Sure.
But they hate each other. Like it's palpable. Whenever we're around them, like they really, really don't like each other. And like once they leave the room, we all talk about it. We're like, what the hell? Why are they having this kid? What is wrong with them? Like, they do not like each other.
But see, that's everything. This couple, they have a kid in high school. They've been together forever. It's not like a new couple going, oh, if we're going to make this work, we need to throw in a baby. That's a pretty common, stupid young couple move. That happens all the time.
That's a pro move.
Just saying. Just curious.
Get the kid, and then you'll be happy.
That'll do it.
Won't sleep. It'll be great.
Yeah, it's the anchor baby. Yeah, they're like, right now, when we're getting all this sleep and we have all this energy, things aren't going well. But just wait till we're sleep deprived, and we have to worry about another human ahead of ourselves and ahead of the other person. That'll make things go really, really well. Yeah, so somebody on the text line, it happened with my ex-wife and I, and all I'll say is she is now my ex-wife.
Yeah, it's the all telltale signs of we're about to get a divorce. And I'm telling you, I know where you're going here. You're saying, what the hell is their problem? Why are they getting a new house if they're sleeping in separate rooms? But dude, people do this constantly where they try to like fool each other into thinking like, hey, we can just make this last because we both have careers and whatever. But no, dude, this is just going to go down in flames. Okay. Something's going to happen with that house.
Fair enough. We'll check in on it. Somebody else says, I know cops have separate rooms so they can get sleep.
I mean, that's,
if you're on a different schedule, I mean, that seems like a legitimate reason.
Actually, my fiance and I used to do this when I worked overnights at Fox. is I had to go home to work at midnight. And so it was like that one I can understand.
Okay.
Because I had to go in at midnight and then I would come back and sleep for like 5 hours and I'd go to bed at like 8 at night and then wake up. You know, it was it was loopy. So in that situation, I could get it. But in your friend's situation, it just sounds like, hey, we sleep in separate rooms. I hate her. But anyway, we're remodeling this house.
Yeah, we're designing the house. We're just picking out the fixtures, and it's great. The other one on the text line, I need a separate room for my wife because women are just so gross.
Have you tried men? Would be my response.
Well, he's listening. I assume he's listening.
Yeah,
or he just texted in and went the other way.
Yeah, I think that's when you need to see if you're into men. Because if that's the case, then, you know, go marry a guy. Or if you're a woman texting in, have you tried women?
They could just be asexual.
It could be.
Yeah, no.
Like the lead singer of the Smiths.
Just other people are gross. That's like bisexual. And there's asexuals who are like, nope, just don't touch me.
See, like, I've never understood asexuals.
Yeah, well, that's because you're so sexual.
It's true. Like I said, all my teachers wanted me. It was disgusting.
And you
dude.
Reciprocated.
Oh, my gosh. It was disgusting. Yeah. It was like fish in a barrel in high school, dude. I had math teachers all over me.
Best linebacker in the state.
Yeah.
And that'll happen. Mr. Burns.
All I had to do was just throw up Lake Oswego review articles when I came into class.
Yeah.
I could see it in their eye.
I get it. Well, NFL training camp started this week. You've probably heard some unsettling stories about how well it's going for the wide receiver core for the New York Giants since getting rid of Odell Beckham Jr. Well, it got worse this morning, and then I've got some other stories from the first week of training camp. So let's start things off right there. You're listening to The Sinner and the Saint on 1080 The Fan. Luke Anderson, Will Darkins with you on a Saturday morning. I flipped the TV from golf when the golf guys left and put it on Jack Hanna's Wild Planet or whatever, where you go around wrestling snakes and animals and stuff.
Did you go to ABC?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You watching that?
Oh, yeah. I watch this every Saturday morning.
It is fantastic. So the guy's, like, trying to tame the cobra, and he's sitting, like, 2.5 feet from the cobra's face, and he's got it, like, kind of, you know, in a trance or whatever. He's, you know, one of those snake charmers. That's what he does. So the snake is motionless, but he doesn't have it, like, pinned. He's not, like, holding onto its head. So then Jack Hanna off screen starts yelling him questions. So the guy starts talking back to him. And then, of course, he's casually having a conversation with Snake 2 feet from his state. And the cobra snaps at him. Missed him.
Dude, that's...
Seems like a bad idea.
Yeah,
you shouldn't be that comfortable around. Like, it took him, like, 3 minutes to, like, soothe the snake. Going back and forth, finally gets a comment. It's like, so how'd you do that? Tell me all the steps that you went through. And the guy just starts having a conversation. It's like, no! Keep your eyes on the snake, you moron.
That's how comfortable they are, though.
I know.
People like that, I think you had a near-death experience, and now you feel invincible, and you're just like, screw it, I don't care. That's what I thought Steve Irwin. I thought Steve Irwin maybe, like, very early in his life, had a very near-death experience, and then after that, he was just like, I'm invincible.
I don't know, man. It's that adrenaline burst, though, right? You go and you put yourself in harm's way. It gets you, makes you feel alive. People jumping out of airplanes, bungee jumping, snowboarding. Yeah, I mean, you played football.
Getting just speared by a stingray.
What was it from football? Probably had to get you pretty jacked.
Nothing really. Actually, one of the most unjacked things was fall camp.
Oh, I'm sure.
Actually, the first week of fall camp got you super unjacked because it wasn't full-on contact. Like, they take the first week, and I don't know if this is the same in other camps and other schools, what they did, but, like, the first week, they try to ease you into it just a smidge.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Oh, yeah, it was usually, like, helmets, but no pads.
Well, it's what they call shells, so it's helmets, shoulder pads.
Oh, you would do shoulder pads.
Nothing okay. below, and yeah. so you do just kind of like the wrap-up thing, but then week two is when it really starts picking up. First week of camp, though, they don't want to get you hurt.
Of
they
course.
Don't, you know, they want to just ease you into it, but, dude, it's boring.
What's the biggest week one game that you play? Because we've got Oregon-Auburn coming up August 31st, which is not that far away, just over a month away for the first. And that game is huge. What was the biggest week one game that you had?
That? I mean, it's massive. It's
No, that you played in.
Oh, that I played in. Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm sorry.
No, this is a huge week one. Yeah. But I'm just wondering that, like, the difference between Oregon showing up to their camp when they're playing Auburn versus playing Portland State or whoever.
Yeah, the biggest week one game that I ever played in was probably TCU at Dallas Cowboys Stadium.
Okay.
And that was really, it was very indicative of how our season went, because we scheduled, for reasons I still don't understand, TCU, and then the next week was Louisville at home. Whew. But then the week after that was Boise State at Boise State. That was the year they were ranked third in the country.
That's a gauntlet.
Yes, and TCU that time I think was ranked like 5 or 6. That was the Andy Dalton's senior year, the Rose Bowl year for them.
Yeah, and Louisville wasn't great. I mean, they've had a couple bubble ups, but they're still a power five. Of course, yeah, they're not a patsy by any stretch of the imagination. So is there a different vibe when you go into camp knowing that that's how your season opens, or just kind of like, all right, let's get to work?
I think it's more of that. You know, for the most part with camps, it's kind of the very beginning of camps, and I always throw spring ball right out the window because
I hate spring ball.
Again, I will tell you, if you get excited about spring ball as a fan, just be aware the players don't give an S.
Sure.
Like, they really, really don't care about the spring ball game.
Except for the freshmen.
Even then, they're just trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
But they're happy to be there.
They're very happy to be there.
They don't know any of the plays, and they don't know what's going on, but they're happy to be there. And then once they figure it out, they're like, oh, what's the point?
And some of the dudes that are walk-ons, you're kind of trying to battle for positioning once you get to fall camp to kind of get there. But, you know, for the most part, when it comes to, like, getting ready for that first game, Oregon might be paying attention a little bit more here, because you look at that first game and really, this is your season.
Yeah.
It really is, and I hate to put that much importance on it, but we look back to what happened last year between, what was it, Auburn and Washington, right?
Yep.
Washington lost that game, and I truly believe after they lost that game, that's what changed the course of their season, because they weren't the same after that.
Yeah.
They just really weren't, and it really created such an awful environment for the Pac-12. I mean, it did. The Pac-12 title game was awful. Everybody in the Pac-12 was awful, and you just hope that the Ducks can, like, either eke out a win or have a strong performance, so it sets the tone.
Well, and then the Washington State, the Apple Cup was really disappointing too. I mean, it was a great environment and all the snow and everything, but Gardner Minshew had never played a game in snow that I know of, and it looked like it. And that was a big letdown too, because Washington State was really fun last year. So that was the one thing that we were holding on to, because they probably were not a college football playoff team, but they would have been pretty exciting to see in a Pac-12 championship game. And that Pac-12 championship game, I think we're still waiting for them to score. Pretty dull.
I don't think that was even the worst part. The worst part was the canopied off 300 level.
Yeah.
That was so terrible. And what was even funnier about it?
The game was bad, though.
The game was bad, but what was even funnier about it was when you were watching, you could definitely tell the director was in the ear of the producers and cameramen. Don't pan out. Keep it down at the 100 level, because it was empty seats after that, dude.
All right. Well, the worst way you could possibly start camp is in your offseason, get rid of your superstar wide receiver. New York Giants got rid of Odell Beckham Jr. Thursday was the first day of camp for the New York Giants. They lost Sterling Shepard to a fractured thumb. I still haven't seen reports on how long he'll be out, but probably in the 6-week range. Then they lose Corey Coleman to an ACL. He's likely out for the entire season. That's all Thursday. How about this report this morning? What was their big signing? Who was their guy they were bringing in? Golden Tate.
All right.
Golden Tate gets a 4-game ban for fertility drugs. So he is claiming that him and his wife are trying to, you know, have a child, and he cleared everything to the NFL, but this is an immediate suspension that he will be appealing. But right now it looks like there's another wide receiver out for at least 4 weeks. Now, the NFL level, it's always tricky, because you think that, you know, the superstar wide receivers give you a ton of value, but at the same time, are all of these guys superstars? Do you think this is going to just set the Giants on a path that they cannot recover from? Because I don't think it does.
No, because they were already on that path. I mean, they really were. This is kind of a throw up season for them.
Sure.
This is just kind of like a, hey, let's see what sticks.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing that's really even like a cohesive plan going forward, because you have Eli Manning, somebody who you can only expect maybe 1 to 2 years of
hang out till the other guy's ready.
Yeah. Average play. And that's a question mark, and I'm not even really putting that all on him. I'm just saying you have a horrible offensive line, and so really you can't even perform at what would be considered like a 7 on the 10 scale.
Don't get Saquon Barkley hurt.
Yeah.
And wait till and get Daniel Jones ready to go out and not embarrass himself.
Dude, you might want to go to week 8 and see how, and I know this is ridiculous, but you might want to go till week 8, see how the record is, and then just sit Saquon if it's that bad. Like, if you're 1-6 by week 8 with a bye, like, maybe call it quits.
Yeah.
I mean, just maybe sell the whole ship. Trade some players, get some picks, and then start to rebuild this thing.
Yeah,
I mean, because honestly, this is just looking so terrible right now.
Did you see Eli's comments about Odell Beckham Jr. saying how awful they're going to be with him gone? It's actually pretty good. I like Eli. I like Eli in this respect. He goes, "Yeah, I don't think they bother me." This is on Odell Beckham Jr.'s comments. "I don't think they bother me. You just kind of shake your head and laugh. I won a few games before he was here." Which is true. I mean, they, what, one winning season while Odell Beckham Jr. was there?
Yeah, I don't think he won games. I think his defense did.
I understand that, but he won 2 Super Bowls.
No, and his defense won 2 Super Bowls.
I understand.
Yes.
But he played well in both of those. I believe he has MVPs in both of those.
I got you, man. Hey, Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl.
He didn't win 2. Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl. He didn't win 2. Just saying.
I don't know about that. You know, this to me is a fitting end for Eli Manning's career because he's not going to get traded.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to go play for another team. Nobody's going to want him after this, even if he has this season. And then, you know, we head into 2020 and, you know, it's like, "Hey, I got one more year in me." And the Giants are like, "We don't care." Nobody's going to take him. Jaguars are the only team that I could think that might want to do it. But now you got yourself Nick Foles, and that might be okay. You got to give that 2 or 3 years. I can't think of another team that would want to pick him up, except for, of course, the Redskins. They're the only team stupid enough that would bite on that.
They probably would. Or watch him in a Bengals uniform.
Oh, you know what? Andy Dalton wasn't the solution. Eli Manning is.
That's right. If you're going to stick with Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis that long.
Yes.
Yeah. A couple other quick things from training camp. Obviously, we're in the first week. Did you see Antonio Brown's arrival?
Hot air balloon?
Hot air balloon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do anything for you? Does that make any sense, wasting a bunch of money on camp arrival?
I don't know. I can't believe you had that much money after the whole tossing an appliance out a window and hurting a child thing. I won't forget about that, dude.
You shouldn't.
Like, Antonio Brown to me is such a tool.
Yeah.
He is such an effing tool. And I think you're going to see it this year. You're really going to see it because I think
Wait. Didn't he stop playing for his team who was still in a playoff run because he didn't want to be there?
But what was holding him back from becoming a true tool was that he could mask it with talent, right? Like, yeah, that's the same thing as ODB. Like, you can call him a tool all you want, but you
OBJ.
Go, ODB, whatever. You can, you know, whatever, blonde guy. You can call him a tool all you want, but he performs on the field. I think once he gets to the Raiders and Derek Carr starts throwing in the ball, I think you can call him a true tool because he won't know what the F to do, dude.
Well, and he's playing for John Gruden. So it's like, if you're going to have a blow-up mess, isn't that the perfect scenario?
Yeah.
Just a team without a home.
Yeah.
A coach that's insane. A quarterback that's way overvalued.
A coach that... By somebody, there was a few players last year who said when they went to film session, he was showing them like 1990s film sessions. He's like, "This is how we're going to play football. In between the lines of scrimmage." It's like,
oh boy,
dude, you are so screwed. Yeah. To me, all these antics are things that, you know what, Jalen Ramsey was the other thing. He came in that stupid Brinks truck. It's like, dude, like, maybe you just need to play football because Jalen Ramsey, you are following the same story arc of every highly paid cornerback, which is like you do well 1 year and then you do well the next year and then you finally get paid and you suck.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen.
Well, let's play a quick round of pay him, don't pay him. Zeke Elliott.
Yeah.
Okay. Melvin Gordon.
No. Dude, did you see Phillip Rivers' comments?
Yes, they were absolutely fantastic. So here they are right here, actually. This is Phillip Rivers about Melvin Gordon holding out. Said they're going to get a lot of... Oh, this is about the running backs that are there. They're going to get a lot of work. It certainly is a deep position for us, and those guys love to play and work hard. We love Melvin, but we're going to go on without him. We've what we've got. It's a pretty dang good group.
I thought, didn't he say something like Melvin? Isn't that his name?
No, I didn't see that one. I just saw the dude. Like, the guys here love to play football. We did well without him.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, we like, in case he comes back, I'll just say, like, yeah, he's great. But if he doesn't come back, like, whatever.
I mean, dude, that guy could barely finish a season out because of injuries. And I think that's the whole symptom with running backs, too. The only reason I say pay Zeke Elliott is because there's a historical, I think there's a historical preference with or precedent with the Cowboys. If you go back to the 1993 or four season, whichever one it was, you remember Emmitt Smith had the holdout. They lost two games, paid him, and then won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So I think as the Cowboys, you kind of have to look back at that and go, yeah, well, maybe we'll pay you.
Yeah, but wasn't DeMarco Murray the leading rusher in the NFL when he played behind that offensive line?
DeMarco Murray and Ezekiel Elliott are two different players.
I understand that. DeMarco Murray, though, after he left the Cowboys, became the real DeMarco Murray, but behind the Cowboys offensive line, led the NFL in rushing.
I understand, but again, okay, I will go back to the statement. Ezekiel Elliott is a different kind of back. I understood that, you know, DeMarco Murray was able to, I don't know, be a statistical monster, but at the same time, Zeke Elliott's a game changer. Yeah. He's somebody that once he gets one good run, your defense is screwed because the momentum starts to pick up. Like, he's that type of player. Every single Cowboys game I watched this last year, that was the case. If Zeke could break free for like a 12 to 15 yard gain, that's a, you're screwed on that carry, like, or that possession. You're screwed.
Yeah. He's a freak too. He's a super freak.
Doesn't he also beat people?
Yeah, I mean, he was convicted, so.
Did he, like, hit a woman at a concert?
He knocked over a security guard was the most recent one. He had some issues with a past girlfriend, I believe, but the big one this offseason was him shoulder-checking a security guard and dropping him to the floor. So I believe that's where we're at with Ezekiel Elliott. Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to talk about NFL players and analyze them and then like have this in the back of your head.
Oh, and he threw an appliance out of the window. Oh, and he, you know, didn't he hit his girlfriend? Oh yeah. And didn't he knock over that guy at the thing?
Yeah. It's like, how am I supposed to analyze them and say like, he's essential to the team when it's like, no, he's harassing people constantly.
One word: bifurcate. A Seahawk gets paid, and we have poll questions. We do those next, but first, your SportsCenter update. So the Blazers have rounded out their roster. They got their last piece. There is shenanigans going on at the Tour de France. Is there a worse sporting event if you had to participate in one of the great sporting events in the world than the Tour de France? And then the Clippers look like they're getting a new arena. We'll talk about all that garbly gook in hour two. But right now, the Seahawks have made their inside linebacker, Bobby Wagner, the highest paid at that position in the entire NFL.
Great job, Bobby.
He negotiated the contract himself.
So oh, did he?
He did, actually. So I'll give him a thumbs up for that. But that seems like a pretty rock-solid move. He's still playing at a very high level. He's one of the best defensive players in the NFL, if not just linebacker. And he's kind of the center of that defense. And Seattle looks like they still have the window open a little bit. They were a playoff team last year when everybody was kind of counting them out. What do you expect from the Seahawks this year?
Middling.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, that's what they're doing right now. I thought this contract was totally about middling, not understanding what they really want to do.
Really?
Yeah, I mean... If you take a look at the Seahawks roster and you take a look at how everything is kind of rounding out at this point, I mean, you're just kind of trying to figure out what your path is with Russell Wilson. I mean, you really didn't make a huge effort to surround him with at least one big name receiver.
DK Metcalf.
Yeah. I think you needed to kind of go out there and try to find him a target. And I know there's a little bit of gun shyness there because you did that with Jimmy Graham. And that didn't necessarily work out.
Yeah. Well, before Russell Wilson, you went and got Dean Branch, you got Percy Harvin. They've made that move before for big name wide receivers. Sidney Rice.
Sidney Rice worked out okay.
He was all right. Yeah. But he wasn't the game changing receiver, I think, that they expected to him. They tried to get Brandon Marshall last year. So they went young at the wide receiver position. But Tyler Lockett would played a lot better last year, 2 years removed from that broken leg or whatever it was. That hampered him. But yeah, you've still got pieces. And DK Metcalf, if what they say about the early results are true, that guy could be a game changer.
Possibly, but you know, I think what it comes down to, and you know, we're hitting on the point right now, which is that it seems like the Seahawks never are able to fully utilize a big name wide receiver, and most teams do, right? You know, you have guys like Julio Jones, Odell Beckham Jr., Antonio Brown with the Steelers, but you know, I think it speaks more to Russell Wilson and his style of play.
Yeah.
And Mike Sando came out, and I think it was either this week or late last week, and did his tiered quarterback ratings, right?
Okay.
And he put in tier one, Tom Brady, of course. But
really? Tom Brady made tier one?
Huh. Tom Brady was in tier one. So was Patrick.
He's only 42.
Oh, I know.
Got a lot of football ahead of him.
So was Patrick Mahomes.
Haven't heard of him. Where does he play?
I think
Kansas State?
Maybe it's Kansas Tech.
Yeah. Pat Mahomes.
So Pat Mahomes was in there, but then they also had, as the number one of that tier, Aaron Rodgers. Now, Russell Wilson was also in that tier, and Mike Sando came out and basically said, hey, one of the biggest factors that I look at is, can a player change the tide of a game individually as a one person in football? And that's pretty difficult to do. In the NBA, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's more likely than not you'll have a LeBron James, you'll have a Kawhi Leonard, you have
Damian Lillard.
Lillard. Somebody stars. That just changes the course of the game.
Well, but, and there's only 10 guys on the court.
But I think that you have these two dudes, Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, who are coming off of, I don't want to say awful, well, Rodgers' awful season, but Russell Wilson, kind of a disappointing season where you started to see the style of play that he has break down and people kind of figure it out, which they say, dude, if I can get you out of the pocket, there's a 50% chance you'll do something really great. But there's also a 50% chance you'll royally screw up and be 20 yards back the other way.
Yeah, there's an element of that, but the one thing that Russell Wilson does not do, two things. I mean, he's not particularly turnover prone, which is great. Like, he'll take bad sacks, which end up, you know, ruining a series, but not necessarily a turnover. And the other thing he does is he doesn't take big hits. For a guy that gets out of the pocket and runs as much as he does, he stays healthy. So that's one of the two elements where you kind of go, all right, I'll forgive you getting that slide down 20-yard sack twice a game because you're not going out and trying to take on a linebacker and Garoppolo-ing it to ruin your season before it gets started. You're not going out there and trying to be a superstar and go out in routes like RG3. RG3 was rookie of the year over Russell Wilson. When they met in the playoffs, RG3 could not walk, and the Seahawks walked through that game. So you have those elements where I think because he's so good at those two things, you kind of give him forgiveness on the others. Like you said, there's a 50% chance he makes a spectacular play.
Yeah. I just, you know, the other thing, kind of throwing Bobby Wagner back into this is, do you think Bobby Wagner hated Russell Wilson with the same veracity that all those other dudes like Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman?
No. No.
Or do you think he did and he was just really, really good at hiding it and that's why they're paying him all this?
Well, no, but I mean, it's interesting because what's your Bobby Wagner soundbite that jumps into your mind? What's your outside of football, around the play, what's your Bobby Wagner moment? Because I've got Earl Thomas flipping the bird to Pete Carroll and coming out this week and doubling down and going, oh yeah, that was meant for Pete. I feel bad if anybody else in the saw it, but I don't regret that I sent that bird his way. You got Richard Sherman screaming at Michael Crabtree. You've got Cam Chancellor holding out. You've got, you know, all of these guys. Michael Bennett was a, you know, constant distraction outside of the off the field. Bobby Wagner doesn't have a big personality outside of football. He just is a really, really good linebacker. And I think he fits in that mode where he doesn't necessarily want to be the guy on all the commercials. I know he does Beacon Plumbing commercials up in Seattle.
Does he really?
Yeah, I've heard those a few times.
What does he sound like? That's the other thing. Yeah. I don't know what his voice sounds like.
Yeah, but you look, take all those big personalities and they're gone. Marshawn Lynch is gone. Doug Baldwin is now gone. That void is not being filled by a Bobby Wagner going, finally, I can stretch out and be the mouthpiece for this team. I don't think he wants to be. That's why he gets along with Russell Wilson.
He gets along. I think he's just a master at just, being tolerating of him. And I, you know, all the power to him because I think on this show I've made it very, very clear.
You hate Russell Wilson.
I really don't like Russell Wilson, and I understand that he is, you know, he's a very caring person. He's
Children's Hospital every Tuesday.
Children's Hospital. He's, you know, a philanthropist. You know, that's fine. But there's a sense of insincerity under it that just irks the living F out of me. And I loved it that Aaron Rodgers had that one line of, I guess God wasn't on their side.
That is fantastic.
It is perfect. And it goes back to my whole thing of when I hear athletes talk about God in congratulating themselves, to me,
it just takes you back to that Chris Jansen concert.
I can't stand that kind of thing.
You this is twice today. You're having trouble bifurcating.
Well, I'm having trouble.
You have to separate the on-field, off-field stuff.
Here's what I'll say. The same type of people that would get pissed at me for saying this are the same type of people that would say, screw you for kneeling during the anthem, right? They say, keep politics out of sports. Well, keep your God out of sports when I'm watching it. I don't care about that. I just don't. And you know what? Here's the biggest sense of insincerity about it. If you go back to Johnny Manziel's Heisman Trophy ceremony, his acceptance speech, who's the first person he thanks?
Let me think. Mr. Rogers.
It's God.
Ah, dang it. I should have got that one.
Big white dude with a beard in the sky.
Is he white?
Ooh. Calling out my white privilege.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll take that on.
Here, this is something that I'm glad I have the ability to do. I really don't, like, when I'm watching a game, I don't worry about anything but, like, what goes on the game. Russell Wilson is incredibly fun to watch on the field. Bobby Wagner is a fantastic linebacker, and you realize how bad your defense would be if you lose that guy when he misses a game. Those guys are fantastic football players. I am a Seahawks fan, as you know. But at the same time, I can separate Big Ben from all of his shenanigans that he has outside of it and Ezekiel Elliott and all the crap that he had. And I would rather just watch these guys play. And sometimes it becomes more and more difficult. The more we sometimes root for people to get more personality into it until we don't like their personalities. And it's like, oh, go away.
55305 is the Better You Today text line. Somebody calling me out very correctly. Morally lazy people don't like Wilson. That's correct. I am morally lazy.
That's very, very accurate.
Self-admitted, morally lazy, yeah. Will Darkins does not care for Russell Wilson and his hot wife.
Does he have a hot wife?
Smoking.
Does he have a
hot wife? Hot wife. And you know what else is interesting? I loved how when he was about to, you know, go into all these contract negotiations and everything, people were like, oh, I think he's going to go with the Giants because, you know, Sierra
wants to live in New York.
Yeah, Sierra wants to live in New York. Dude, you name me the last number one single Sierra had. She
riding any?
Coattails of Wilson right
now.
Calling you out, Sierra.
Calling you out, Sierra. Make some new music.
Or at least some good music.
Name a Sierra song.
I don't know. Goodies. Is that it?
No idea. I think Goodies
is the only one. And that was like 06. I remember dancing to that at high school winter formal. That was when I was discovering
Goodies.
Freak dancing.
There you go.
That I could put hip to butt and it was good. Bro.
And with that, we transition to good versus evil. Next, right here on The Sinner and the Saint. This is 1080 The Fan.
Have you been too busy to keep up on sports this week?
What has happened today? What has happened? What has happened to the national interest?
No time to form your own opinions?
I stand before you here today in the midst of gnarly times.
Well, no worries, brah. Let The Sinner and the Saint shred the gnar while you just sit back and ride the wave. It's time for Good versus Evil, brought to you by the Titan of Hawaiian Restaurants, 808 on 1080 The Fan.
This is a great choice by Zion because it will be a great fit for all involved. And remember, right now, I think you'd say Russell Westbrook, maybe Chris Paul are kind of the faces of Jordan Brand. Yeah. Probably Russ more than Chris.
Yes.
Zion is about to take over Jordan Brand.
That was man who relies heavily on Gorilla Glue to maintain the key components of his face, Skip Bayless. He's talking about the endorsement agreement aligning New Orleans Pelicans number one overall pick Zion Williamson with Jordan Brand for 5 years. Sources say this is the richest annual rookie shoe deal in NBA history. As you may know, Jordan Brand is an offshoot of Nike, and as you may also remember, a Nike shoe exploded all on Williamson's foot this past year. Was this a good enough, we're sorry contract?
I'm still a little hung up on Chris Paul and Russ Westbrook being the face of the Jordan brand. I had no idea. Isn't Michael Jordan the face of the Jordan brand?
No, he's the body.
I mean, I expected him to get a huge shoe contract. He's too charismatic. He plays with a style that is hard to find comparisons for. He's going to be one of the most exciting NBA rookies since LeBron James. And I don't know that he has a comp set. So if he lives up to it, there's a potential that he could have gotten underpaid for this.
This speaks to that. And also, we don't know how much longer Greg Popovich is going to be on the sidelines. So he had said for years and years and years that, you know, when he didn't really want to talk about retirement, but he would ride off into the sunset with Tim Duncan.
That was extra in the cast of the failed Goodfellas sequel, David Miniman. This week, the San Antonio Spurs added a 15-time All-Star, 5-time NBA champion, and 3-time Finals MVP to their coaching staff. Wait for it. It's Tim Duncan. The Big Reliable and Greg Popovich were part of 22 straight playoff appearances and epitomized what consistency looked like in the association during the 2000s. Still, players historically have a bad reputation for coaching in the NBA. Do you think this is going to end up differently?
The Big Reliable or the Big Fundamental? I always like the Big Fundamental better.
I always just thought it was the big guy. That's what they called him. the big guy.
Yeah, that guy. I like that he's not going into a head coaching role if you're going to jump into coaching. You see that too often with players where it's like, oh, he's a really good player. Give him a head coaching job. He's going to work for the guy that made him a ton of money, made him a superstar. So I think he's doing it out of respect. Or going into it with a certain amount of respect. And I think he'll take the job seriously. I think Tim Duncan has, an extraordinarily different personality than most NBA superstars. You wonder if it's going to be the temperament that's going to translate to other players. But at the same time, it's hard to argue with his success. And if he speaks, you would hope players would have the respect to listen.
Add on to this story, apparently sources are saying that Manu Ginobili was approached before Duncan, though Ginobili said no. I don't know what that means.
I saw that. I don't know what it means either. Who cares? Yeah.
It's great if you're able to get some downtime. The other reason why is you want to represent your country and all of the great things that come with it. But for a personal standpoint, you don't necessarily need it to build your brand or for marketing anymore.
That was man recently woken up from a nap, Jalen Rose. 11 high-profile players, including Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, have withdrawn participation in the 2019 FIBA World Cup this summer. Just to be clear, this is not the Olympic team. It's the team that plays to earn a qualifying spot in the Olympics. The squad should do just fine with guys like Jaylen Brown, Julius Randle, and Donovan Mitchell, but this whole situation does beg the question, should the U.S. even compete in FIBA?
I don't know. We go through this every, decade or so, where we completely lose interest. It won't matter until they lose. It's funny because everybody that I've heard talking about this or everything I've read on it, they're like, well, I don't know if they've got everything to win. You have to win to qualify. Only the winner qualifies for the Olympics. What do you have to be, like the top 32 teams in the world to qualify for the Olympic tournament?
Well, the only difference is if you win FIBA, you don't have to play a qualifying round.
Again, who cares?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's not even that much to be gained by winning. If they lose, it will get people's attention, and then all of a sudden you'll get another dream team or redeem team or whatever the hell you want to call it, something that rhymes with dream.
Well, I thought about that recently, too, about like the whole Olympics team and how it's going to form out. Are we 2 years out? Or are we?
No, next year, 2020.
Yeah, next
Tokyo.
Year?
Tokyo 2020.
Dude, I don't know how many super high-profile players you're going to get.
Yeah, but...
Like, really? But I kind of think about it. I'm like, I don't know if Kevin Durant's going to do it. I don't know if Steph Curry's going to do it.
Do you really care?
Don't think LeBron James is going to do it because he's too old.
And do you care?
I don't know, man. I kind of like to see us dominate in the Olympics.
Sure. Okay. That'd be neat.
You're so unpatriotic. You're not even American.
No, I'm pretty sure I am.
Let me tell you, you POS, you better stand up and salute right now.
Whoa, man, that Chris Jansen is wearing off hard.
Yeah, he got me hard.
Wait, what now?
All right, time for my favorite story of the week there.
Following uncomfortable pause, more words.
This one comes from New Mexico. A New Mexico woman told a Sonic fast food server, quote, "This one's on God," when he asked her for payment Monday before fleeing the restaurant with her order.
Can we do that?
Delilah Hernandez, 30. 30, by the way.
Delilah.
Because when I first saw the headline for this story, I go, old woman, has to be.
Sure, yeah, like just a little bit of senility popping in.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pulled up to the Las Cruces drive-thru on her bicycle and ordered a meal, police said. After telling the server that God would pick up her tab, the server replied, "That's not how it works here."
Good response.
The server gave Hernandez the meal after she allegedly threatened him. The server called the police. Hernandez was found eating the meal in a nearby park. She told officers she knew what she did wrong and contemplated not eating the food.
But she ate it.
She eventually gave in because she was starving.
Yeah. God told me to eat it.
This one's on God.
Yeah. This one's on drugs.
Yeah. There's a sad part to this, but then there's also the incredible part that this woman had the cojones to just go like, you know what, jerk? This one's on God. You call him for the tab.
Yeah. You're going to, what are you going to call the cops? Listen, if you want to upset God, you don't give me that food. You go ahead and call the cops.
Cops may have a gun, but God has a God gun.
What? So you work at Sonic.
Sure.
Okay. You're behind the counter. Some woman comes up.
Am I a manager?
You're working the drive-thru. You're an assistant manager.
How many years have I been there?
4. Whew. But
dude, I'm not an assistant or I'm not a manager yet. And I've been there 4 years.
You're an assistant manager. You're the first assistant manager. The next management job is totally yours.
Like in another town?
No, that store. You could have gotten a manager job, but you would have had to go across the river. And you've never been a fan of that side of town because they were your rival in high school football. But here you are. You're working at Sonic.
It's accurate.
Some woman pulls through on a bicycle.
Yep.
She looks a little kooky dukes. And she says, "This one's on God." You're just going to let that slide, aren't you?
Yeah, of course. I'm going to let
like,
it slide.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's, first of all, doesn't cost you any money. It's not like you have to repay the till for the burger. It's a funny story. I think you just move on. I would let it go.
I would let it go once, but you got to worry that she's going to come back and then say that this one's on JC.
Yeah, that's fine. If she tries it twice, boom, she's done. But I say with that line, you know what? Now I'm wondering, did she get away with that Carl's Jr. the week before? Was this her first try on that? Or did, Hardee's let her just kind of roll through? McDonald's, no problem. Let's try Sonic. Oh, man, those guys at Sonic are real sticklers. Now it's going around the meth community down in Las Cruces, New Mexico that, you can't get away with it at the Sonic. Let's go back to Burger King.
This one's on God. It sure is. Here you go.
High five and send her on her way. Yeah, I would let her go, but maybe that makes me a bad person.
Hernandez was charged with felony robbery, which is most likely to be reduced to petty misdemeanor. The report added that she will likely be forced to pay back the restaurant and possibly find an additional amount.
Felony? Was it $4 for a cheeseburger at Sonic?
If she goes to court, can God be her witness?
Oh, that would be good.
Can she do that thing that evangelicals do and embody God on the stand? Be like, "I call my next witness God." And she goes,
when she realizes she ate a Sonic burger and she gets the bubble guts, can she go, "Damn you, God."
What is that line from Planet of the Apes?
Damn you. You dirty apes.
Damn you. You dirty apes. Damn you all to hell.
Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
All right. That's your good versus evil. It's brought to you by our friends at 808, the Titan of Hawaiian Restaurants, 2454 East Burnside or 52nd and Woodstocks. Hey, the Blazers roster is done. It's set. We added our final player. He's a veteran. He's won championship. He's great. Do you know who it is? We'll tell you next. Center and Saint, 1080 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.